My name is Mike from Albuquerque, New Mexico. So I did cancel my Spotify over the Joe Rogan news. It's not just about the COVID misinformation. It's just, I think he has bad guests. I think that there are people that could do much better. So to me, this isn't about misinformation versus facts. It's simply a boycott.
The backlash is still growing against Spotify and its most popular podcast, The Joe Rogan Experience. In a recent statement, Spotify's CEO, Daniel Ek, made it clear that he doesn't want to, quote, take on the position of being content censor, end quote. That was in response to criticism of an interview Rogan did with a doctor who spread falsehoods and misinformation about the COVID-19 vaccine. Then over the weekend, things got even more complicated. Spotify quietly deleted over 100 episodes of Rogan's podcast, according to JREmissing.com. That's a missing episode tracker. The mass removal came after a video mashup surfaced of Rogan using the N-word and sharing racist views. The decision to remove the content reportedly came from Rogan himself. Meanwhile, Spotify is refusing to sever his $100 million contract. So where does Spotify draw the line on content moderation? And with that amount of money on the table, what responsibility does Spotify have to step in? We'll discuss all that and more after the break. I'm Jen White. You're listening to the 1A Podcast, where we get to the heart of the story. Remember to join future conversations, download our 1A Vox Pop app, and leave us a voicemail.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Yogi Tea. We know that sometimes finding a moment for yourself isn't so simple, but self-care doesn't have to be complicated. In fact, it can be as simple as brewing yourself a warm, comforting cup of Yogi Honey Lavender Stress Relief Tea. With soothing aromatics like lavender, chamomile, and lemon balm, this relaxing herbal tea blend encourages you to take a moment to pause, step away from the chaos of the day, and sip your way to a more stress-free state of mind. Support your well-being with Yogi Tea.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
We're discussing Spotify, Joe Rogan, and content moderation. Let's get back to the conversation. Joining us is Ashley Carman, who covers the audio and podcast industry for The Verge. Ashley, welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Kevin Roos, a tech columnist for the New York Times. Kevin, always great to have you on.
Thanks for having me back.
And we reached out to Spotify's press team for comment, but have not heard back. The invitation still stands. Ashley, just take us through the timeline here. How did we get from COVID misinformation to racist language?
We have to back up a little bit. So prior to Spotify's deal with Joe Rogan in 2020, he did not have any episodes on the platform at all. So Spotify's goal really with its exclusive deal was to get him on the platform and kind of lock him in exclusively there. But Rogan had been a podcaster for years prior to that deal. So he's recorded hours upon hours of podcast content that presumably Spotify would have screened. And that's where a lot of this the racial slur clips come from, is his past archives. But since coming to Spotify, he's really, you know, it was during the pandemic, really. So he started to kind of have these guests on who were more fringe scientists, doctors, who, you know, according to a lot of people, are spreading COVID misinformation. So it's kind of two separate issues. One of which is like, did Spotify review his archive? And the second is, how are they handling his content moving forward while he's under their deal?
Now, Kevin, the backlash to Joe Rogan really heated up when Neil Young threatened to pull his music from Spotify. Since then, other high-profile musicians and podcasters have done the same. We got this tweet from one 1A listener who says, I dropped my Spotify premium account last week after Joni Mitchell and Neil Young spoke out. I refuse to give my dollars to a platform that enables vaccine misinformation. So, Kevin, what kind of pressure has Spotify come under to punish Rogan, both externally and internally?
Yeah, well, it's obviously had those high-profile protests by Neil Young and Joni Mitchell, which just personally I was bummed about. Big Joni Mitchell fan, was going through a huge Joni Mitchell phase right when they pulled their albums. Very disappointing for me. But then also, they've been under pressure from their own employees who have been asking them why Joe Rogan continues not only to be on the platform, but to be promoted heavily within the app, to be paid all this money in this landmark deal. And they've been under pressure, you know, from sort of civil rights groups, from, you know, anti-vaccine, or from pro-vaccine groups and groups of public health officials, because, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic still, and people feel it's very high stakes to get correct information out to the public, and especially with someone at the size of Joe Rogan's platform. He reportedly has north of 10 million people listening to every episode, and that, people argue gives him a big responsibility to get it right.
Ashley, how would you describe Spotify's response so far?
I don't even think Spotify really has externally responded. Everything we've heard, quote unquote, from the company has come through leaks primarily. So as far as external response, I would kind of say they haven't responded much at all. They had one press release that came out in which they said they would release their policies around their moderation, which they did and had never been public before. And then they said they would put a COVID advisory in front of any podcast episodes that discuss the pandemic. So that's the extent of their public response. And I would say, especially in the growing face of kind of like the racial slurs issue and everything else, they could definitely stand to talk a bit more publicly.
Well, Kevin, the key factor in this controversy is the $100 million contract that Spotify paid to license and distribute Rogan's podcasts in 2020. What's the significance of that deal as this continues to play out?
Well, it really changes the relationship between Spotify and Joe Rogan. I mean, Spotify has millions of podcasts on it. Everything from politics podcasts to entertainment podcasts to true crime podcasts. I mean, there are no shortage of podcasts on Spotify. But Spotify has never before paid a podcaster $100 million to be the exclusive distributor of their content. And that changes their relationship to Joe Rogan from just being a platform where his podcast is distributed to being something more like a publisher of his podcast. If Spotify is the only place you can listen to Joe Rogan, and if they're paying him this extraordinary sum of money, many would argue it gives them a bigger responsibility, more like a traditional publisher or an editor. Spotify has argued that it doesn't control the content on Joe Rogan's show, that it's something like, you know, a TV network that licenses the right to broadcast content from a major sports league, for example, and that it doesn't have editorial control over his show, but clearly it's able to influence what it puts up of his on its platform, and it has been trying to do that without sort of seeming overbearing and without breaking the argument that it is in fact just a neutral platform.
And for the musicians who have decided to pull their catalogs from Spotify, part of the argument I've heard from them is that we don't want to support the spread of misinformation. But talk about the money part of this too, Kevin, and how revenue generated from these artists' catalog, how it connects to this.
Yeah, well, I think Spotify has a sort of reliance on having the best musicians, the most popular music on its platform, in order to really be viable. I mean, the reason people subscribe to Spotify is because it has almost everything. No matter what kind of music you're into, you can find it there. But if artists start pulling their music in greater numbers, if there's more of a backlash, if not just Joni Mitchell and Neil Young, but if more popular sort of contemporary artists start pulling their music, then it can become a real business problem for Spotify. And so I think the challenge here is that a lot of musicians don't control their own streaming rights. Labels do, so they can't just sort of unilaterally decide to pull their content off Spotify.
Ashley, what has Spotify gained from having Rogan's podcast and fan base?
We can assume that they gain a leg up on their competitors. They spoke a little bit about this in an internal town hall that I leaked, where they essentially explained their thinking behind signing Joe Rogan. Part of it was actually to be able to secure deals with hardware companies. So like Google and Amazon, basically, if you have the same music and podcast catalog as everybody else, there's no reason for its competitors to keep Spotify on this platform. So instead, now they can say, well, your listeners, your users want Joe Rogan. So you're going to have to make a deal with us if you want to give them what they want. So there's that. Second, Spotify is really trying to diversify its revenue, particularly to make more advertising revenue from podcasts. And to get advertisers sort of interested and into the fold, it needed a huge podcast, multiple huge podcasts, to kind of anchor that advertising product. So Joe Rogan helps bring in advertisers and basically tries to get these advertisers to buy on the rest of Spotify's podcast catalog.
And Kevin, when you think about the podcast industry as a whole, how significant is this moment?
Oh, it's a big deal. I mean, Joe Rogan is the most popular podcast host in the world and has been for some time. And this is really a standoff between him and this platform. I think the sort of likely scenario is that people will, you know, sort of get over this and move on, but there will continue to be, you know, disagreements over content, over where the lines should be drawn, and about whether people should support platforms like Spotify with their subscription dollars.
And let's bring in another voice, Renee DiResta. She's the technical research manager at Stanford Internet Observatory, which studies abuse and current information technologies. Renee, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Ashley, briefly, again, go over Spotify's guidelines on content policy and moderation.
Yeah, so Spotify released its policy on how it kind of moderates content on its platform just a little over a week ago now for the first time ever. With it, it released its COVID guidelines. So it had four rules. Let's see if I can recite them from memory. One was basically you can't say that designs are designed to kill people. So you could say vaccines are deadly, but you can't say they're designed to be deadly. You can't deny the existence of COVID or cancer or other really serious diseases. You also can't instruct people to drink bleach. And you also cannot encourage like coronavirus parties or like parties where people would catch a virus.
Okay, wait. So there was a specific instruction that you can't encourage people to drink bleach?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, so those, I believe, were the four rules. And so obviously you could see how many podcasters, Rogan, including Rogan and his guests, have been able to kind of skirt around those rules because Rogan, as far as I know, does not believe that COVID is fake. He's had COVID. He has never said that he thinks vaccines were designed to kill or anything like that. So he has really been able to kind of divert around those rules.
Here's a voicemail we got from Leslie in Libertyville, Illinois. And again, we received this before Spotify removed the episodes of Rogan using racist language.
We will base our decision whether to continue subscribing to Spotify on whether Mr. Rogan decides to use this opportunity to provide better information to his listeners. Information that has valid research behind it. And we will be discontinuing our Spotify service if Mr. Rogan chooses not to do this.
We also got this tweet from Deb who says, Joe Rogan is awesome and amazing. He's the reason I started listening to Spotify. I would think that people would be intelligent enough to know this is entertainment only. And Renee, Joe Rogan is not a journalist, but we're in a media environment now where what is looked at as reliable information and what's looked at as entertainment, it's gotten very, very muddy. And I'm curious how you're thinking about that right now.
Sure, my take is I actually don't think deplatforming is particularly effective here. I don't think it's particularly deserved either. And there's a couple of reasons for that. The purpose of deplatforming is to try to prevent particular types of content from reaching audiences because it's harmful in some way. And sometimes that can be hate speech and sometimes that can be misinformation. I don't think that that in either of those categories, I don't think that the goal is sort of punishment for past statements at this point. I think that Rogan has an audience of 11 million people. He has widespread broad appeal. And as you note, this question about entertainment, we're sort of at a point where people have lost confidence in experts. They've lost confidence in institutions. They see Rogan as somebody who's giving them plain-spoken commentary and asking people the questions that they have. One of the deep challenges, though, is, and I think Rogan's actually a very interesting case. He's had a number of pro-vaccine podcasts in the past. Is that in this COVID environment, he did kind of go down that path, right? That path towards assuming that that the contrarians, the most contrarian voices, were the most reliable voices, and he platformed them. He gave his access to his audience of 11 million people to these particular voices. And one of the things that I think is interesting about that is it to me signals that there is a deep distrust in institutions and demand for these other voices. And I think that the question of why are those voices resonating is something that actually does have to be reckoned with beyond just trying to kind of, push them entirely out of the conversation. I don't think that deplatforming a person with an audience of 11 million people works. He will move to a different platform. Those voices will continue to be heard. So there's an opportunity instead to create editorial oversight and invite a more, an alternative roster of guests who will counterspeak against those points, and to use that platform as an entertainer, but as a trusted entertainer, to reach audiences with a different collection of guests who can present more reliable information, but to do it in a way that, that includes that open questioning that Rogan has, that kind of describes a lot of his appeal.
So I was curious for you, Renee, you went on Rogan's show back in 2019. Why did you decide to go on the show?
I was the most hated guest that year. Barry Weiss and I tied for that honor. I went on, he asked me, he reached out via email a couple of times, said, "I heard you on Sam Harris." I was doing work at the time on the Russia investigation, and I was asked by the Senate to look at the Russia data sets turned over by Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And I was not looking at collusion. I was only looking at what did this say about the social media dynamics and what could we learn from it about state-sponsored interference on social platforms. And at the time, you'll recall, that was a hugely heated political topic because anybody who acknowledged that such interference had happened was seen as like holding the secret belief that President Trump was illegitimate so I was, I had a very rational conversation about it with Sam Harris, and then Joe reached out and said, "Would you come on and would you talk to my audience about it? I think people need to understand how social media can manipulate." And I said no the first time. I said, "Your audience is going to hate me." And he was very, he sort of followed up and he's like, "I'd really like to get at some of these questions." And I started to feel like, it doesn't do me any good to only speak to outlets where the audience is going to like me, right? There are certain things that, that I believe I have an obligation to say. These are the facts. This is what is true. And people need to hear this. And he did have a massive platform. I watched a number of his videos on YouTube and felt like I was going to have an honest conversation. And I did. I did have a very honest conversation. And his audience did hate me. And that was fine. He actually sent me a note and, wanted to kind of check in to make sure I was fine with the online response. And, and I thought that was very, very nice. I felt like it was an opportunity to reach audiences with a message that I had that I wasn't going to get through in a more mainstream media channel that already believed what it was that I was saying. And this offered an opportunity to reach a very different group of people. And I've actually gotten a number of notes on Twitter and an email from people who've said, I heard you on the podcast and it changed how I thought about the issue. And I began to realize that, collusion and interference weren't the same thing and that this was actually happening. And that was my goal. And so it was accomplished.
We're talking about Spotify's latest response to the Joe Rogan controversy. And a reminder to have your questions answered on future topics, or just to let us know what you think, tweet us at 1A.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
We're discussing content moderation. Let's get back to the conversation. We got this tweet that says, "Rogan has had guests on that flat out lied about COVID, easily debunked with minimal effort. He should have staff and funds for that. People will and have died because they listened to his show." Ashley, can you just give us a rundown of some of what's been shared specifically around COVID on the show?
Yeah, a lot of this conversation started around a specific guest, Dr. Robert Malone, who Rogan had on at the end of last year. Among some of the things that Malone said is he called the vaccines experimental, which obviously is not true because they have gone through clinical trials. And yeah, he just made quite a few different claims. There's been other claims around myocarditis that was made on a separate episode that was kind of, I think, debunked even within the episode. So when the fact-checking happens, it's useful, but it doesn't happen very often.
Now, Spotify invested nearly $1 billion in podcasting between 2019 and January of 2021. And as you said earlier, Ashley, their pushback to this controversy and not silencing Rogan is that they're a publisher, not a platform. So how well does that argument stand up when you look at the deals and investments they're making?
Yeah. So Spotify argues that they're a platform.
Or rather a platform, not a publisher. Yeah.
That they are a neutral platform, meaning, you know, anyone can come there, anyone can publish, which is true to a certain extent. But I think when they cross the line into publisher, when many people would say they do, is when they start investing in programs that they then distribute exclusively, they monetize exclusively, they promote. At that point, it's a question of, okay, even if maybe their direct studio teams aren't creating the content, which Spotify has said internally, you know, our studio teams don't review the content that Rogan makes or have any sort of editorial control over it. Therefore, we are not a publisher. I still think when you're monetizing, promoting, distributing exclusively, there are definitely some questions of then what makes you not a publisher? How are you not a publisher?
Here's a clip from Owen Grover. He's the CEO of True Fire Studios and the former CEO of Pocket Casts. That's a curated podcast app. He spent over 20 years in the podcast industry, and this came from an interview he did with 1A producer Sophia Alvarez Boyd.
One of the ways to get around difficult decisions and processes like vetting content is to say, boy, you know, there's over 1 million active feeds and there's, you know, there's no real AI technology or machine learning that can really help you because it doesn't help you with the nuance of, you know, people who are deconstructing issues that may be problematic and in a constructive way, right? And the easiest thing to do is just to pull up your hands and pull a Facebook and go, this is really hard. And, you know, it's nearly impossible. I think that if you say that, it's a cop out. What you should be saying is all of these things have degrees. To the degree which the company has a special, unique and differentiated relationship with creators, scrutiny just needs to be higher.
Kevin, what kinds of issues has the podcasting industry had with content moderation? I mean, there are so many podcasts out there now.
Yeah, podcasting really sort of is newer to the genre of content moderation scandal we're talking about here. In part, I think my sort of theory is that's because there are so many podcasts, they're so long, and it's not as easy as sort of, you know, picking a Facebook post that needs to be fact-checked or something. Sometimes the controversial or false claim comes in minute, you know, 72 of a 3-hour podcast, and so you really need some kind of system for sort of identifying that, and usually it comes down to user reporting, and there isn't really a lot of proactive enforcement. But this is also just a newer problem, and I think there are going to be companies that find ways to solve it. But yeah, with something like Spotify, I mean, there's just no way that their employees or even content moderators could look through every minute of or listen to every minute of every podcast that appears on the platform. That's just not realistic.
Ashley, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would say I would agree with Kevin. I mean, what we've seen with, not to get too wonky, but podcasts traditionally have been distributed through RSS feeds, which are basically like a podcast player's functioned as a search engine. So you could pull up these links, which are RSS feeds, and listen to any show you wanted. And in that world, moderation is a little bit more difficult to do because you'd effectively be saying, we don't want to surface links that you can find freely available. And you know, what we're seeing the world change to now, specifically because of, honestly, Spotify, is these exclusive deals where they don't rely on RSS. And that changes up the moderation discussion as well, where it then becomes, more on the onus becomes more on the platform to kind of start to pay attention to what's being distributed there versus what's freely available online through RSS feeds.
Well, media critics and correspondents are calling this Spotify's Facebook moment, referring to when Facebook banned conspiracy theorist Alex Jones from its platform in 2019 for engaging in hate. Kevin, do you think that's an apt comparison?
In some ways, yes. I mean, I think that, you know, what Facebook had with Alex Jones was a committed adversary, someone who was very intent on breaking their rules and who, you know, when he was sort of asked to step back from the conspiratorial fringes, to take down certain posts, to, you know, when he sort of got wrist slapped, he then went further and doubled down and sort of dared them to punish him. I don't think that's what we're seeing from Joe Rogan. As you said, as we said earlier, he's been somewhat contrite and has sort of promised to do better and having more sort of mainstream experts on his show. So we'll see if he ends up going the Alex Jones route. But I do think they're somewhat different. I mean, Joe Rogan really is an entertainer, a comedian. He's you know, he's not a political operative, at least in some of the same ways that we would say someone like Alex Jones is. And so I do think there's a sort of a limit to the usefulness of that comparison.
Ashley, what do you think the impact of Spotify's response will be for other players in the field? Like, let's say they come out with some really strict guidelines, or there's a label on the podcast. Maybe there's one on there now. I have no idea, that says, you know, for entertainment purposes only, that makes it very clear what the podcast is for and what it's not for. What kind of impact would that have on the rest of the industry?
I mean, theoretically, if people come to enjoy a label on their podcast, it would obviously push potentially the rest of the industry to kind of consider doing that themselves. But, you know, considering that Spotify really earnestly got into the podcast space in 2019 with multiple acquisitions, I would say that their impact has already been pretty outsized. I mean, they made the exclusive podcast deal sort of a thing that we talk about regularly, and they've really driven up the prices of what we think about for advertising and also how much a podcast should cost to distribute. So they've already kind of impacted the industry, and I think that their response and how they handle this will definitely drive the conversations more broadly across all the platforms.
Kevin, how much foresight are tech and media platforms putting into content moderation these days?
Well, clearly not enough. I mean, they seem to still be surprised when this happens to them in Spotify's case. And if they've been paying any attention for the last 5 years, they know that content moderation begins the moment that you allow people to start uploading to your site or your platform. Every platform that hosts your user-generated content has had or will have a content moderation scandal. And I also think that it's curious that Spotify appears to be so flat-footed here and so caught by surprise, because we've seen over the last few years that it's generally a bad idea to apply your weakest rules to your most popular broadcasters. This is a curious thing that tech companies do. They kind of exempt their most popular people from the rules that govern people on the rest of the platform, when really it should be the opposite way. I mean, the fact that Joe Rogan has millions of people listening to his show should sort of subject him, or should suggest a more stringent set of rules for him, not a laxer set of rules. And that's what we've seen across platforms, from Facebook to Twitter to YouTube in the past. And that's one thing that's, I think, going to change here.
Ashley, could Spotify reach a tipping point where they do more than quietly remove some of Rogan's back catalog? And I'm thinking specifically about the internal pressure the company is facing right now.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we've seen at other tech companies like Apple and Netflix, employees sort of internally organized, they walked out, they protested what was happening at their various companies. And that oftentimes resulted in some sort of, you know, change, or at least a more public-facing conversation. And so I can imagine, potentially, if Spotify employees are upset about what they've seen the company do or their lack of action, they might internally start to organize and maybe bring some of these concerns more to the public.
So we have just about a minute left here, and I'd love to hear from each of you what you'll be watching as this continues to play out. Kevin, I'll come to you first.
I'm going to be watching Joe Rogan and what his reaction to this is, if he ends up sort of backing off the conspiratorial fringes in an effort to salvage his deal and keep his relationship with Spotify intact, or whether he doubles down and goes further in the direction of COVID conspiracies and misinformation.
Renee, what about for you?
Yeah, so, you know, the vaccine conversation is not over, and anti-vax activists are really trying their hardest to undermine confidence in routine childhood vaccines now. And I am also going to be, you know, watching Joe Rogan to try to see if he actually is bringing on people who can do some real good around that topic, as he had in the past with, you know, guests like Peter Hotez.
And Ashley, I'll give you the last word here.
Well, I am personally interested in the employee response internally and sort of whether that prompts Spotify to kind of take a bit more responsibility for the content that they exclusively distribute.
That's Ashley Carman. She covers the audio and podcast industry for The Verge. Also with us today, Kevin Roos, a tech columnist for The New York Times, and Renee DiResta. She's the technical research manager at Stanford Internet Observatory. It studies abuse in current information technologies. Ashley, Kevin, Renee, thanks for speaking with us. Today's producer was Sophia Alvarez Boyd. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk more soon. This is 1A.